Welcome in. We now welcome on Zach Albaverde, the senior writer covering the Gators for Gators Online on Three's Florida affiliate. And Zach, thanks for doing this. Haven't talked to you since I think the Gators came to Austin. We know that was a weird week where the game was almost not even the focus with the Napier contract, with I think Mertz and Lagway hurt. A weird week, but a lot of things have settled and been some interesting things happening in the swamp since that time.
Yeah, that was actually that was the turning point of Florida's season and maybe even the Napier program after, obviously, that Texas game. They just had no chance of competing against the Longhorns without Lagway. Folks might remember he did go through like pregame warmups and try to make it seem like maybe he was going to give it a go. After that, however, he did return the following week against LSU. It was coming off the contract, the vote of confidence from Scott Strickland, and basically saying that Billy would be back, which he made that statement before Florida got blown out at Texas. And then that result happens and Florida fans are kind of like, I don't know. And man, to their credit, to Napier's credit, the staff, and obviously the players on the team, they turned it around the last month of the season. They won their last four games. They certainly found some success with Lagway at quarterback. And I think more importantly, they started to figure things out on defense and seemed like things were clicking on that side of the ball. So that certainly gave them a lot of momentum going into the offseason. And also, I think just made them internally probably feel more confident about their product and their program at this point.
I remember during that game, you know, Texas got up big, but even when Florida scored, they were celebrating. They thought they had done some real stuff, and maybe for that program it was. And that stood out to me, kind of showed how much belief maybe inside the program there still was with Napier. Obviously, Scott Strickland giving the vote of confidence. There's also, I think if people aren't recognizing this, there's been a lot of change as far as university leadership at Florida. They're about to probably add a new president that they're swiping from Michigan.
That's right.
So that may have had to do with it. All that said, it seems like there's a lot of positive feelings, a lot of confidence with Billy Napier heading into this year. Is that the case? And why do you think that the program put all their chips into the basket to support Napier heading into 2025?
Yeah. You know, thinking back on it, at the time, that Strickland made that decision, it was kind of one that I don't want to say was questioned, but at the same time, I would say that it was needed. Like, you know, Florida was kind of going through a period where they weren't having a lot of success on the recruiting trail. You know that there was some negativity out there, kind of just as – you know, as far as, you know, coaches negatively recruiting against them and some of the issues that they had throughout the season. But at the same time, and I think it's important to kind of revisit just how many injuries Florida had dealt with, last year, despite those injuries, and obviously the ones that stand out the most were at quarterback. You could tell even with that Texas game that Florida was getting better over the course of the season. They just were not competitive against Miami and Texas A&M. But after that, they started to put together some performances and find some things that gave, I think, promise for the future and obviously was kind of a sign of things to come with the way that the season ended. To be honest, we'll get into this probably a little bit more, but one of the big reasons why the administration felt like they wanted to stick with Napier and they saw better days ahead was because of where the roster was at in terms of a retention standpoint and a talent standpoint. There's no doubt that he has upgraded Florida's roster, especially at some key positions, and then also has been able to retain a lot of Florida's top players. You don't see them losing many guys to other programs that are coming in and poaching Florida's best players. And then especially this offseason, Florida was obviously able to keep guys from not really going anywhere that they were really counting on for 2025. But they also got a lot of their juniors and redshirt juniors to decide to come back for 2025. And a lot of that had to do certainly with NIL and Florida making an investment from that standpoint. I think some of it too was these guys saying, hey, like, I felt something special at the end of last season. I got a chance to come back and play another year with DJ Lagway. We can kind of build on some of the success that we've had and try to make a run in 2025. You know, that's guys like Jake Slaughter, Austin Barber, Tyreek Sapp. All these guys could have turned pro and decided to come back. And Caleb Banks as well. He's probably the one that I should mention first in that category. So, and I think the administration probably recognized that that's where things were trending in terms of where the talent was at and then how much of it would be coming back. And the third and probably final point, I remember writing about it, was just the cost of a coaching change. Like, it would have been very expensive for Florida to go out there and try to make a change there, pay out the rest of Florida's assistant coach salaries, and then go out there and then try to find another coach and potentially have to pay a buyout for him. You know, the other thing that complicated things a little bit in that last cycle was early signing day, if you remember, was actually on December 4th last year. And usually that's like around mid-December, and it was much earlier. And then secondly, the transfer portal window had been reduced from 45 days to 20 days. And it ran from December 9th through December 28th. So point being is, if you were to make a coaching change, that new coach would not have a lot of time to then turn around and try and salvage a recruiting class, get some players out of the portal. It would be a quick turnaround. And I think all those factors led into Florida deciding to move forward with Billy. And again, those last 4 weeks ended up, you know, at least for the short term, it proved their decision right.
I don't think we can talk about this year's team without just starting at the quarterback position. DJ Lagway, Willis, Texas, north of the Houston area. I think I remember talking with you about whenever Florida came to play Texas A&M in 2023, I think it was. You were trying to get some recommendations from us about where to go, flying into Houston, getting to College Station, going to see Lagway. It's a little bit of a journey, I bet, but still, Lagway, super promising freshman season, the type of player that Florida looks at, says we are building our program around this guy, has had some injury concerns throughout this portion of the calendar year in 2025. What's kind of the latest with his health, and then just how high are the expectations for Lagway?
Yeah, he's you know, really the reason for some of the belief, I think, internally at Florida, and then certainly nationally, the some of the recognition that Florida's been getting in preseason rankings and just some of these lists and previews that are coming out from different publications that view Florida as, you know, not just a preseason top 15 team, but maybe a team that can compete in the SEC and certainly be a college football playoff contender. And it does start with Lagway. You know, he is, I think, seeing all these different lists, most have him as one of the best quarterbacks in the country heading into the season. And he's still just a sophomore who's only started a handful of games. And while he's performed very well with the time that he's got, he still has so much room to grow and get better. And that's something that's exciting about his game. Certainly the concern has been his injury situation and the fact that he did not throw during spring camp, which was a little bit of a surprise to open up practices. The good news for Florida and for him is that, one, it seems like this was done precautionary. You know, if he had to have thrown or they needed to have him go out there and tough it out in a game-like setting, he probably could have. And this was done as a precaution to one, let his shoulder heal. More importantly, allow it to potentially get more strength. And for this lingering shoulder injury that he has to not be something that flares up or deals with inflammation as much during this next season. And they're hoping that if his shoulder can get strengthened, that would set him up for more success in the fall. So that's kind of been their game plan. But now they've come out of camp and in the spring, and we first reported at Gators Online back on April 27th that DJ Lagway had resumed throwing for the first time in months with his trainer in Jacksonville. And then the day after we released that story at Gators Online, Lagway put a video of himself throwing on his social media, and Florida fans just went absolutely nuts. All he was doing was just throwing a simple pass inside a facility. But I think it was a sight that Florida fans were happy to see. And we actually learned from Billy Napier this week in an interview that he did that Lagway is now up to throwing three times a week. They expect him to be full go for OTAs. So right now it seems like things are trending in the right direction. And if his shoulder has progressed to the point that this hopefully is not something that is bothering him throughout the year and his hamstring is healed as well, I mean, we're going to see a much better version potentially of DJ Lagway when we did that last month of the season, when he was one recovering from a hamstring injury, but also dealing with this shoulder injury that was kind of nagging throughout the year. If that's better and his hamstring is healed, it'd be interested to see what he can do.
I'm just going to say, guys, you probably need a fiduciary financial advisor. And I've got the guy for you. His name is David McClellan with Forum Financial. He works broadly and deeply with his clients as a financial life coach. And he should know something about coaching because he won several national championships as a swimmer for the University of Texas. He specializes in financial planning and has contributed numerous articles to Kipling on the topic of retirement tax bombs. So contact David today to be your fiduciary financial planner and schedule a one-hour consultation to assess your financial situations. The free consultation is available, so just give him a call. The number is 312-933-8823. That's 312-933-8823. His email is also in the description below.
Look over on the defensive side of the ball real quick. Last year, Napier brought in Ron Roberts. There's Robert Bala. There's Vinny Sinceri. Played good defense at times, kind of got lit up at times, especially when you look at Cam Ward in that game. Yeah. But who didn't Cam Ward light up? So now with those three there being the defensive brain trust, how's that group going to be better this upcoming season?
Yeah, I think first of all, you know, if they can be healthier, that's one way that they're going to get better. They just were a banged up unit that just continued to get banged up as the season played out. They were still banged up this spring. The defense that we saw out there in the orange and blue game was not the defense that'll be out there in full force this fall. So, you know, that's number one. I think number two, they have figured out a lot of things defensively in terms of how they want things to operate with Ron Roberts in terms of what he does on game days, what his role is within the defense. You know, last year he was the play caller and the defensive coordinator, but he was also a position coach, at least to start the year, and was still kind of working his way through what his day-to-day looked like and where he wanted to be on game days. Now he is a walk-around defensive coordinator. He's not assigned to a specific position. He gets to put more time into game planning, play calling, and just overseeing the defense. I think the biggest note, I wrote about it several times throughout the season last year, and I think it's worth repeating, is just him being on the field versus in the box. That was the biggest difference, or one of the biggest differences to me, in the improvement in Florida's defense and the way things were called. As we all know, and certainly the Florida fans listening and any Texas listeners that remember those two losses for the Gators early in the year, it did not go well against Miami, like you mentioned, Joe, and it did not go well against Texas A&M. Ron Roberts was on the field for both of those games, calling the plays from the sidelines. And as he told me, just trying to get used to Florida's setup, how they communicate things amongst coaches, how they work players through substitution packages. He just wanted to be down there on the field as they were running through all this for the first few times. Well, Mississippi State week, he went up in the press box or the coach's box and had his eyes in the sky and called plays from up in the box the rest of the season. He told me that he much more prefers doing it that way. And to me, I can see why, because it looked like he called a much, much better games when he was up there with that perspective. So I think now that they kind of have that figured out, they know what they want him doing They know how they want to work things in terms of who's relaying calls from the sideline, or excuse me, from the coach's box down to the sideline. I think having Robert Ballin now step in as a guy that has some experience with Ron Roberts, they have a little bit of relationship and football background. I think they're going to work really well together, as he's like in a co-DC role with Vinny Sinceri. I'm not exactly sure how that works in terms of, like, I know who's going to be calling the plays. It's going to be Ron Roberts, but, like, what do those co-DC roles and responsibilities look like for Bala and Sinceri? Is one of them potentially getting groomed to replace Roberts at some point if he retires in the future? I thought that that's what they were doing with Austin Armstrong. So I would imagine that something like that is going to be set up. But this is going to be Ron Roberts' defense. He is going to be calling the plays, and he's going to be calling the plays from the box. And if he's got a healthier unit, I think that's how Florida can get better this year.
Along those lines, Billy Napier is still going to be calling plays on offense. That means he's delegating more on the defense to guys like Roberts and Bala and Sinceri. But how has Napier, I guess, maybe evolved to, like Steve Sarkisian, still call plays, still oversee everything, and still try to put this program in as best a position for success as possible?
Yeah, he's just talked about trying to take things off of his plate so that he can focus on what he likes to do the most, and that's call plays. And I think in the past, he's juggled a lot of different responsibilities at Florida in terms of recruiting, NIL, roster management, NIL dealings, fundraising. Before Florida had a front office and a GM and things set up the way that they did, I think that he probably took on a lot more and just had a lot more on his plate. A lot of that load has been lessened. And I think that that's been done so that he can focus on play calling. And I think from a coaching standpoint, two guys that have helped alleviate that for him have been Russ Callaway and Ryan O'Hara. Russ Callaway has continued to get promoted each and every year at Florida. And this past offseason, he got promoted to offensive coordinator. And while he isn't necessarily the full-time play caller, he is involved in the play calling, in the game planning. He runs the unit meetings. He's running things at practice. He's basically doing everything that an offensive coordinator does, except 100% call all of the plays. And his increased role and involvement is also something that has freed Billy up more. And then the other thing is that Billy, in addition to being head coach, offensive coordinator, he was also basically served as the quarterback coach. Now, he had Ryan O'Hara with him, and he's been in his room. He's been with him at practice, and he's been with him since Louisiana, but he was an analyst. So he was limited in what he could do and how much he could coach the guys, and his involvement in the team, in the position room at quarterback. All those restrictions got lifted last year. He got promoted from analyst to now assistant coach. He is the official quarterback coach. He has the room. He runs everything, and he does more coaching and hands-on work with the players, which therefore it means Billy has to do less. So talking to Billy about this and hearing from all these different people involved in his product, that's kind of how they've been trying to work this thing out so that he can put a better product out there on the field.
So I had the first one I had done in this series, I had talked to Ohio State, and I think everybody kind of realizes that Ohio State had a big year in 2024 because of who they retained. You have Jeremiah Smith. Yeah, you have Caleb Downs. But when you keep Travion Henderson and Donovan Jackson and Lathan Ransom and so many guys, and you bring in a Will Howard, it really helps your program. It seems like with Florida, we're talking about a lot of different guys, not who left and who's coming up in the wings, but guys who stayed. Is that the case with how things work for the Gators this offseason? And is there a lot of excitement because of those guys they were able to keep in the Swamp?
No doubt. And I think there was also some concern there about if some of those guys would make the jump. And how difficult it would be to replace some of those. But you know, you look at where Florida kind of ranks in terms of how their players stack up nationally, according to some of the, you know, the rankings from sites like On3 and Pro Football Focus. A lot of the guys that are viewed as Florida's, not only Florida's top players, but some of the top players in the country, are guys that could have turned pro after the 2024 season and decided to come back this year. I think the one that sticks out the most and probably would have went highest in the draft is Caleb Banks, a guy who really came on at the end of the year, had some great performances against LSU and Ole Miss, then dealt with an injury, missed the Florida State game, missed the bowl game, has also missed all of spring with this foot injury that he's been dealing with. So, and I don't know how much of that maybe impacted his decision to not go through the draft process knowing that he was going to be injured and recovering, but he's certainly someone that would have been drafted, probably would have been the first underclassman drafted for the Gators. I know Shamar James came out early. I think Caleb Banks would have been drafted before him in the fifth round. And then certainly Jake Slaughter, Florida's first team All-American at center, 100% could have came out. You know, I'm interested to see how much he can improve his stock this coming year, because I don't know what else he could have done other than just, you know, obviously having a whole full another year of tape in the SEC, playing at the level that he does is probably only going to hurt, or excuse me, help his chances. But I'm a little surprised, honestly, like knowing him, it doesn't surprise me because he's, you know, from Ocala, he's a local kid, didn't really have, it seemed like, a desire to go and jump to the NFL, but just given how well he played and some of the feedback that he was getting as a center at the next level, I thought that he might make the jump. And in talking to him at the bowl game site, like, it didn't even seem like he considered turning pro despite how well he played last season. I think Austin Barber, Florida starting left tackle, certainly considered it a lot more than Slaughter did. And of all these guys, Barber was probably the one that was closest to coming out early. But just wanting to come back for his senior year, wanting to be one of four offensive linemen returning in the starting lineup with DJ Lagway, with some of the other pieces that they got, Eugene Wilson, Jaden Ball. I just think he wanted to come back and try and make a run with this team, as did Tyreek Sapp. He would be the fourth guy that could have came out early, and he led the Gators in sacks, led them in tackles for loss. If you follow the PFF grades, he had a 90, I think 90.4 PFF grade, or maybe it was just 90 last season, which they don't hand out grades that high. PFF doesn't. And that was his grade for the entire year. It was the highest graded defender that Florida had in a season since Jonathan Grenard in 2009. So that's kind of how elite Sapp was playing last year. And he was the final guy that made a decision on whether or not he was going to come back to school or turn pro. He kind of waited literally until the last day of the deadline before he came out and decided to come back to school. So, you're talking about your starting defensive tackle, your starting edge rusher, strong side defensive end, your starting left tackle, and your starting center. If you lose half of those guys, this is, you know, a different looking up front on both sides of the ball. If you lost all of them, I mean, we're talking about a complete rebuild there in the trenches. So to get those guys back was a big deal for Florida. And I'll be honest, I mean, I don't know if Florida doesn't close the season the way that they did and have so much momentum for 2025, maybe another one of these guys decide to just give the NFL a shot. I think there was so much draw and appeal to come back to Florida. These guys did get compensated from an NIL standpoint as well, and they all got raises to come back. That didn't hurt. For Florida to have those guys to be able to count on this season is a big deal.
I guess kind of the last thing we got Texas has not traveled to Gainesville since 1940. It's been a long time. That game was in December, which I'm trying to figure out how that even worked way back then. They haven't matched up in the postseason. They just really, you know, two teams that have not crossed paths throughout each's great history within college football. So for Texas fans who are going to make their way to Gainesville this upcoming year, what are some things they should look out for, try when they're there, travel tips? I know Orlando or Jacksonville is where a lot of people are probably going to filter through to get there. But where should people go, or what should people do once they get into Gainesville?
Yeah, what's the date for that game?
I have my banner wrong, and now I feel like an idiot. It's October 4th, not October 14th. So October 4th is when Texas is going to be heading to the Swamp.
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously, you know, to get outdoors, it's still, you're still going to be getting good weather here in the Gainesville area. I mean, I'm an outdoors guy, so I like going out around this area to some of the different things that you can do. If you've never been to Gainesville or the Gainesville area, there's some pretty cool sites that you can go to. You know, I live out here in you know, Alachua High Springs area, which is about 30 minutes outside of Gainesville, and there's a bunch of springs out here that you can go to and check out. It's just incredible scenery. You got Payne's Prairie in, like, kind of right outside of Gainesville. That is an incredible just prairie to go to, and you can walk around, and there's wild horses and buffalo out there. It's pretty cool. You know, there's a butterfly rainforest, which is on campus at UF. Really cool spot next to the Museum of Natural History. That's a good spot if you're into that stuff. And then there's a couple other outdoor things. You know, there's the Devil's Mill Hopper, which is a huge sinkhole that goes really, really deep that you can walk down. It's kind of cool to see. Bring your hiking boots maybe for that one. And then this place called Canapaha Botanical Gardens is just an incredible, you know, just garden area where you can walk around for about a half hour and just see incredible stuff. If you want to see some gators, you can go to Lake Alice. They have gators there. And then also Sweetwater Wetlands Park, gators all over that place as well. So, and then food wise, you know, Satchel's is kind of a spot that a lot of people like to come to, you know, for pizza. You know, if you're looking for a good steak, Embers Woodfire Grill in Gainesville is about as good as it gets. You know, Spurrier's Gridiron Grill has a really good steak. And honestly, if you're coming here as a college football fan, especially for that game, if you're going to go to any restaurant, Spurrier's is probably the best thing to go to as a college football fan, just because it literally is like a museum of all the different things that Spurrier has accomplished throughout his career. But yeah, those are some of my favorites. You know, certainly just the tailgate scene in Gainesville on game day is really fun. Parking can be hard, but that's any college town, any SEC town.
Night kick. I think that's what everybody's hoping for, to maybe get that full experience. So should be a whole lot of fun. Zach, thank you so much. This is awesome. Looking forward to making that trip. Looking forward to seeing the University of Florida and watching the whole Lagway experience. It should be a lot of fun this year.
Yeah, can't wait for it, man. Football will be here before we know it.